Well, welcome, everyone. Thanks again for joining us today, and thank you, Lisa. This is Beth Bonnie, and I'm delighted to bring you some new research again this morning in this discussion that I think you'll find both validating and hopefully interesting and enlightening. And I'm delighted to be joined today by an old friend and colleague and now iPad consultant, John Gray. So I'll let John introduce himself.
Good morning, everybody. My name is John Gray. Thank you for that intro, Beth. Just a very brief background on me. I've been 3 months on board now with iPad as a senior consultant. Very excited to be working with Beth and Rolene, who are old colleagues of mine, and with such a talented team. By way of background, I'm an ex-channel chief. I've worked with companies in the cloud, born in the cloud, as well as companies like Oracle, IBM, and BEA as varying different channel chief roles with those organizations. I have under my belt 20-plus years of experience, and very excited to be sharing and working with Beth today on sharing with you the channel census information. Back to you, Beth.
Great. Thank you, John. So for those of you that have heard this content from us in prior years, you'll know that this is our annual census, and as defined, the census tends to be fairly broad in its set of topics. So today we're going to give you a subset of that data, acknowledging that there's a lot more here that we can't share with you today, which we'll mention at the end how you can get access to that data through our Channelytics subscription service. But I've trended in this data the last 3 years of this study, so you can get a sense of some trend lines. This was fielded right before the holiday last year, projecting into this year's data, and it represents just a little shy of 550 different solution providers. So just as a context, that's what we're talking about today. So, as usual, with data this broad, there's lots of key takeaways, and it always sort of depends on your perspective, what kind of channel you have, how mature your programs are, et cetera. But the bigger themes we wanted to share with you today are these three. Focus on services-led and MSP business models, the state of digital transformation readiness and adoption in the solution provider community, and then overall support expectations the partners have, solution providers have, of the vendor community with a unique focus on the need to help them accelerate their recurring revenue models. So those are three of the kind of highlights we're going to talk about today. Just as a level set here, I wanted to give you a sense of sort of the breadth of the North America solution provider community today. It still stands at about 170,000 companies, 15,000 of which in any one quarter are in some type of transition, either buying or being bought or launching a new division or reorganizing in some way. So there's always some degree of churn in there. But you can see in the broad community, there's still about two-thirds that are small regional providers that sometimes look like the traditional lifestyle VAR and sometimes look very different as a boutique, highly specialized services-led firm. So I think one of the key messages here in this data this year is that small does not necessarily mean legacy or irrelevant anymore. Small can be highly, highly defined and just not showing up on your traditional transaction radar screen because they don't look like a traditional VAR. But that's still the vast majority of the size of the community. They call themselves VARs and consultants still by function, but they do a lot more things beyond that. You can see about 25% in sort of the medium category with revenues as high as $500 million. Tend to look more like an integrator, selling more upmarket into mid-market and enterprise. And then, you know, the top of the pyramid there, as embodied in things like our Solution Provider 500 list, are still less than 10% of the community, revenues over $500 million, and they are more advanced in integration skills and then also in recurring revenue managed services business models with a higher focus on enterprise. So that's sort of the lay of the land, so to speak, in terms of the broad community. I just wanted to give you that as the context before we talk in depth about business models. So I'm going to ask John to kind of take us through sort of the big trends in business models with a focus on MSP.
You bet. Thanks, Beth. So taking a deeper look just at, if you look at the slide that is up right now, What partners were asked in terms of this particular category and piece of research was, you know, what is your number one highest percent of revenue business? And also, what is your number two secondary highest percent of revenue in your business today? So when you are looking at these, think of them as functions as part of that particular partner's business. What is primary? What is secondary? What we walk away with then from those numbers based upon that kind of categorization is that managed service provider is by far the fastest growing component, both for primary and secondary. We continue to see kind of consulting in decline, and let me be clear on this, because services is very much a high growth path that we walk away with from the overall census. When we say consultant, we're talking about individual, I'll call it engagement, as opposed to recurring services revenue models. And then the other thing, as Beth has kind of alluded to, we continue to see VARs really in decline. That kind of lifestyle model of I'm just going to be a reseller is very much in decline as VARs are really transforming their business and are moving over to things like MSP models. If we then move on to the next slide, one of the other areas of the census that doesn't get a lot of coverage because it's a very small percentage of, I'll call it, most partners' revenues, but I think it's important to call this out because it is emerging business models, are the four categories that we've got here. Same definition in terms of primary and secondary in terms of percent of revenues. But, you know, let me call out a couple of these. So in terms of the service provider agent, this is kind of more your legacy telephony-focused partner selling T1, T2, infrastructure as a service kind of provider offerings. One I did just want to dig into for everybody is digital agency, because this is a relatively new but fast-growing category. I came across it myself about 3 or 4 years ago, and this is really an organization. They look and smell and feel very much like an SI. They're very much solely focused on the, I'll call it CMO marketing arm of the business. And they have traditionally been agencies that have managed brands that have then evolved into managing websites that have then evolved into managing e-commerce and hence becoming, I'll call it a digital agency as opposed to a marketing agency. So think of names like Razorfish, Sapient Nitro, WPP. All of these are very large digital agencies, and we've seen this category grow. And one of the other reasons why we've seen this category grow is with the advent of cloud and e-commerce, a lot of the revenue has shifted over to the CMO part of the business, and therefore the digital agency business has grown, providing services to implement e-commerce and brand and all of those good things. Application developer is really the application developer who is providing, I'll call it on a more individual or independent developer basis, application skills to companies. And then cloud broker is really a bit of an amalgamation of several different types, but it's kind of organizations that are out there administering public cloud services and those kinds of things. So we wanted to at least raise the awareness of some of these emerging categories. They're definitely on the up, especially things like digital agencies. Next slide, please. So Beth, back to you.
Yeah. So there's now about 15 distinct business models with, you know, specific definitions and revenue characteristics and so on that are exemplified by those last couple of slides that we track. But what we always try to do is sort of look at the combination of qualities that are attributing to the highest growth, best differentiated, most profitable kind of partners in the market. And you have heard us speak for the last probably 2 or 3 years now about this concept that we call the strategic service provider, sort of a moniker we've created, both through the channel company side of the business for editorial and media and so on services, but also in our consulting and research view. And it's a subset of the community, which for the last two censuses has represented under 20%, ironically enough, exactly 17% of the population last year as well as this year, that embodies these three qualities. And let me just quickly go through them. So the attributes are that they have to have at least a third of their revenue coming from services of some sort. That can be managed services, cloud services, professional project-based services, first and second line support services, etc. Any kind of non-profit revenue. That's the first criteria. Second criteria is that their recurring revenue services are larger than their project-based professional services. Now, that one we may continue to trend a little bit differently in the future and incorporate a rate of growth concept, meaning that their recurring revenue services are at least growing at an exponential rate to their project-based services with a focus on, you know, selling annuities versus selling projects. So high recurring revenue growth, second attribute. Third attribute, that they have a minimum amount of their engagements with customers focused on designing business-oriented business process solutions and sold at least in part, if not entirely, to a line of business decision maker. So those three combinations together create the model we call strategic service provider, and we'll continue to trend this in our research, you know, probably for the next couple of years. In this year's census, you can see how dramatically the subset of the broad community, the 70%, actually fall into these categories. So by definition, 77% of their revenues came from services, 47% of their services came from recurring revenue services, and 65% of their customer engagements had this quality of business process definition, business-oriented solutions sold to a business decision maker. So just keep an eye out for this model as we evolve it, and we'll go into some of these dimensions today as we go through the census data, but we think that this is an important combination of attributes that we'll want to continue to watch. So when we back up and then look at the broad solution provider community, not just the 17%, even these trend lines on revenue are pretty dramatic, as you can see. Back to the 2013 census, when services only represented less than half of total revenue, services is in that trend line is the combination of project-based services, managed services, and cloud services. The difference between managed and cloud being primarily that of a multi-tenancy model. So either they're reselling a multi-tenancy model from someone else, or they have built and are delivering their own, whereas managed services does not have to have that structure. But look at the dramatic trend line of on-prem hardware and on-prem software revenues declining, managed services highest growth rate there with the yellow, cloud services to a lesser extent, and then project-based professional services coming down as part of the mix, and as companies transition those start and stop discrete projects into recurring service contracts. So last thing I'll say here is, as we look specifically at the managed services business model and companies that are succeeding with recurring revenue services, there's been a bit of a misnomer of where the revenue actually comes from by delivery model. Despite the fact that 70% of everyone that we interviewed who had a primary or secondary business model of MSP said, yes, I am putting a significant effort in terms of growing my recurring revenue services this year, the way they are delivering the services by managed services revenue there on the right, it's a little bit different than how some of us might perceive it to be. Namely, in as much as the concept of partner-managed only services continues to be the highest mix of their revenue. That's where customer owns the asset, the partner does not have their own data center, but they're managing the gear wherever it lies. In a co-location facility, on customer premise, at another facility, but it's still the customer's asset, and the partner's value is the management and uptime and performance of that gear. Partner owned and managed is a third of the revenue, where the partner actually has their own data center and is both owning it and managing it. And then resale is where they're reselling someone else's managed service, Datto, Rackspace, whomever. So they're still promoting it and moving their customers in that direction, but they're not owning the gear or managing the gear themselves. So we'll continue to watch how this evolves. We're not suggesting through this data that owning your own data center and managing the gear on behalf of customers is a bad strategy. It's just that the price point of entry there and the cost and risk associated is not, doesn't fit the risk tolerance or the economic, ability of a lot of solution providers. As you remember, you know, 68% of the solution provider community is less than $10 million still. So just something to sort of keep an eye on and watch as MSG services become increasingly more ubiquitous. So now we're going to move on to talk a little bit about digital transformation and sort of that concept of selling business services. Take it away, John.
Great. Thanks, Beth. So, yeah, let's just move forward on to the next slide. So as Beth has talked about with these strategic service providers, one of the kind of three takeaways was digital transformation and kind of the shift in that direction. And we really see currently today, based on the numbers we got back, still a pretty broad scope, right? And the majority of solution providers, as you can see from the numbers here, are really on the, I'll call it entry end or early stages of digital transformation and customer engagement. The most basic, obviously, end of, I'll call it a solution provider is fulfillment, moving all the way through to working at the line of business level, providing a business solution, which would be kind of more around the digital transformation. So you could be, and we've had this conversation many times over with solution providers and partners out there, you could be selling a solution to a company, but there could be fulfillment business that follows off the back of that as part of selling that business solution. But what we're really measuring here is how many times, how much are you engaged at the business solution end of things on this particular scale. I think the other key thing to point out, so you know, two takeaways from this particular slide. Number one, the overall population of solution providers are very much still at the entry stages of this, as you can see from the 29% around fulfillment, 27% around IT solutions. Those that would be sub-defined, if you like, the subcategory group of strategic service providers, though, are certainly, the numbers are the other way around, as in they're far more oriented around selling to the business, the line of business, and selling business solutions. Next slide, please. So with that focus kind of being on business outcomes, as I talked about, most of the overall population is still on the early stages. You can see from this slide, market is too early, sizing, demand, and skills, and so the vast majority. But as Beth kind of talked about at the beginning of the presentation, what we are seeing is that vertical specialization and even horizontal specialization is really what drives that digital transformation, things like warehouse asset tracking, cloud-based EMR, those kinds of things are what drive the relationship with the line of business and are what is driving the business solution sales. So the real kind of walk away here is early days. Certainly we see a good number of partners headed in that direction. We've got the subcategory of the SSBs, the strategic service providers, and those that are headed, I'll call it the fastest in that direction, are the ones that are providing that vertical or horizontal specialization. Next slide, please. So in terms of then the kind of the feedback that we got from the partner population in terms of where they are investing, where is it their interests lie, where are they making the investments in terms of the product lines that they are working with and the resources, skills, training, enablement, and focus, these would be the top three. So number one would be security service. I think the important point here is that on the last census that was done, roughly 21% was the number at that time. It's now 27%. So the, I'll call it, amount of money being invested has gone up since the last time we did the census in security services. Disaster recovery failover is at number two. That's up 20%. And is critically important for companies like MSPs and what have you. But that continues to expand as a key investment area. And number three is Internet of Things. Now, one just clarification I want to make. I saw it on posted on the board around digital agencies. Digital agencies are not new, but it is new as a category within the census. In other words, it has been captured as an emerging category and a fast-growing category from within the census. So I want to be very clear that we're not saying that digital marketing agencies are suddenly new. They've been around for quite a long time, but in terms of the census, it's a new category that we're capturing. Likewise, with Internet of Things, it wasn't a category that we were capturing the last time out with the census, but it has very definitely shown up as an area of investment for our partner base this time around. So that's representing about 20% in terms of investment. And storage design and implementation is a continued investment area, as is network performance management, and they round out numbers 4 and 5. With that, I'll hand back to you, Beth.
Great. And just for final clarification, Internet of Things broken into a couple of different categories, so the edge, analytics, and then data center solutions were actually part of the 2015 census. They were just ranked significantly higher. They didn't make it in the top 6, so they were there. They just were nascent. So let's look at then sort of how this all points back to the relationship between the solution provider and their key suppliers and what their top-rated expectations for support are. Of course, this line of discussion is something we ask in every interview we do, in all the research we do, you know, in most of the consulting we do, because, of course, that's the essence of where we focus as a team. But it was remarkable this year that the vast majority of the expectations did point to help me build my services competency and differentiation, and even further, help me do so in a way that scales more effectively as a managed offering. So we always start a conversation about the relationship between the solution provider and the vendor community with this sort of filter, and it's sort of that idea of trying to figure out where you lie on the map. We track vendor relationships in 3 large buckets as our starting point, as you can see here, strategic, tactical, and opportunistic, and you can see the definitions. The good news about this is, well, I guess, twofold. If you happen to be in the strategic category, one of the 5 lines that they focus on, they're still deriving about half their revenue from those 5 lines. And, of course, depending on size and maturity of partnership, this can be as high as 80%, right? But by and large, it's settled for the last 4 or 5 years at the 50% mark. In the past, the set of opportunistic relationships and tactical relationships were sort of controlled, sort of confined. They were both between 4.5 and 5 number of product lines. And again, this is vendor product lines, not individual product families within a vendor offering. As you can see, this year's census indicates that there's a lot of experimentation going on again. There's new services being trialed, adopted, experimented with, and that sort of aligns to what we hear in all of the interviews we do, not only as partners are trying to figure out where they are going to try to fall in line or differentiate around IoT, but also as they experiment whether should I build, should I buy, or should I resell someone's managed offering. You know, what's the most economical and highest customer value way for me to enter or expand into that market. So it's good to see that there's a lot more lines in the opportunistic bucket these days as they sort of expand a portfolio. The mix is fairly consistent still, that it represents, you know, about 1/4 of the revenue, but I think that's a great point of entry if you have a new offering or service. So then we translate this, and let John talk about sort of how this translates into their overall, you know, revenue and profitability plans.
You bet. So in terms of the, you know, feedback that we got, in terms of the top-line sales growth plan, it kind of is a logic flow. If you think about the 3 biggest takeaways around MSPs and digital transformation and what have you, number 1 was an enhanced sales methodology that tracks things like services attach rate and, you know, back to that digital transformation and services sell of selling to the line of business. Building a sales methodology around selling to the line of business buyer, and also how to integrate the changing pricing models on those solutions and services. So if you think about the massive growth around MSPs and recurring revenue, you think about the massive growth that we're seeing around vendors offering as a service subscription, utility, consumption models, partners are very focused on how can we make sure that our sales methodology carries our salespeople selling the value prop around that and being able to sell to that subscription model, consumption model, and what have you. And also the, you know, an increase in marketing and branding. On the profitability side, increasing the percentage of recurring revenue services makes total sense. If you look at the massive growth rate in MSP, X as a service, et cetera, then they want to make sure that the percentage of their business follows suit with that investment, right? Next slide, please, Beth. So this now kind of flips around to in terms of as a partner, as a solution provider, what, you know, for those strategic vendor relationships, those, you know, top five lines that were kind of referenced by Beth, what are the obstacles that we see that revolve heavily around services success for us and the profitability? And number one, loud and clear, was the pricing model. And with that, you know, it was that you are changing a lot of the pricing models we've been used to for a very long time, perpetual kind of based pricing models. Now, most vendors are coming out with products and services built around subscription. There's obviously the MSP subscription model. There's consumption, there's utility, et cetera. And so those pricing models come with the need to enable and educate partners. And so they're crying out for, please give us help with those pricing models. Number two would be with those investments in terms of partners changing their own models to address MSP and those kind of things. They're basically saying they have a concern that they can generate enough services revenue to support that change in investment and model. Following on from that, Ben, is as vendors are changing to from, I'll call it perpetual product, to a services-based model, that the vendors pay attention to the incentive programs that go with that, such that there is still keeping the partners whole, if you like, around profitability through both front-end discounts, back-end rebates, and what have you. Critically important that as that change is being made, there is sufficient profitability. And then the final one is, you know, with these changes in models, does that change the rules of engagement? And, you know, raising concerns around if now a vendor is providing their product as a service, how does that change short engagement? We want to avoid friction. So let's make sure we're clear on kind of the rules of engagement around short engagement between the teams. So, you know, those were the primary feedback around concerns, obstacles with their strategic vendors. With that, I'll hand back to you, Beth.
Sure. Yeah, just one comment before we move ahead. I think that from the interview work we do, both around this study and in general, it seems clear that the larger, more well-capitalized partners, the ones in sort of the medium bucket and the large bucket, of course, are having less issue with a lot of these perceived barriers in that they can self-fund a lot of the transition to moving from project and product-based to services-based, and maybe are a little less dependent on teaming with the vendor to complete bigger deals or have more coordinated field selling activity. However, some of the medium-sized and most of the smaller folks we talk to, kind of, I guess you would consider your long tail in some cases, addressing these issues sort of can make or break their ability to move from legacy business models to new business models. So pricing as a service or a utility-based model sounds simple, and many people and many vendors address that through special financing programs, but even sometimes the cost of those financing programs can make the difference between the partner's ability to fund, selling storage management solutions, for example, on-prem versus selling it as a service and capitalizing the cost of that over time until they get the return. So I feel like if we cut this data by small partner versus large partner, there definitely was and is a difference between the ranking here. But all in all, anecdotally, when we talk to partners, we continue to hear these being sort of the top of mind challenges as they engage with you and try to take advantage of your programs. So, it's very difficult to make any precise recommendations, in the absence of a specific conversation with each and every one of you. But when we do our program design work and other consulting engagements, these tend to be the top-of-mind issues that are a bit universal across vendors of various sizes and different complexities of technology and so on, as it relates to preparing their partner ecosystem for success in the future market. And the first one sounds so unglamorous, but it's so true, is that we all need to sort of expand the dimensions of the partner's business model that we look at and move from their, you know, kind of selling and transactional capabilities alone, of course, to their service delivery models, their scale and capacity issues, and their certainly their marketing capabilities. And I know marketing is, you know, listed here as number three, but increasingly an important gas in the tank sort of issue to fuel partners to be successful going forward, and an issue certainly for the smaller solution providers that often gets underfunded, as we all know. Channel program structures, you know, tend to address recurring revenue models and MSP delivery models in a financial fund of the gear sort of way, but not as often in terms of different ways to market, different ways to provide customer success and support with things like building, helping partners build a customer success team that's focused on adoption, renewal, expansion, et cetera. So looking at recurring revenue holistically through your program is definitely something we see that it certainly takes a sustained commitment and doesn't happen, you know, those pivots don't happen overnight, for sure. You know, digital transformation, we have a whole separate model for how we look at digital transformation from the most basic of, you know, digitizing assets like electronic medical records up through, you know, industrial IoT, fully automated, you know, supply chain and industrial class solutions. And so that's the fodder for a separate discussion or webinar. We do have time to go through today, but we continue to hear that for partners that are, you know, vesting but may not be the biggest on your list, that sharing those early wins from their peers and giving them the ability to benchmark their assets and their staffing models and their services attach rates and those kind of things against their peers, you know, and in an anonymous fashion is super helpful. So I know many of you have programs that look like that that allow partners to put their data in and compare their growth and investment models against their peers, but we continue to hear requests for this in the work we do with solution providers. So just some things to consider. I'm sure many of you are already well down the path on some of these, you know, considerations in your programs and engagement models, but thought you would like to hear what we hear from lots of conversations with your peers. I would be remiss if I didn't share with you the breadth of the research from this particular study, as well as nine other studies that are embodied in our annual analytics and subscription service on research called Channelytics. For those of you that are not familiar with this offering, these modular pictures here are the topics for the studies that are in this year's subscription, which includes not just the data, of course, but lots of different ways to share the data with different parts of your organization, you know, the field. There's infographics that are short and sweet you can get through in 5 minutes, and long research reports as another kind of deliverable. But there's also access to the CRM partner databases, ongoing advisory services, and then specific kind of operational best practices and guidance that we give as consultants as part of the subscription. So if you aren't already familiar with this offering, please contact one of us or contact Lisa directly, and she can get you the right information. So with that, I'm going to stop our recording here and then open the lines up so we can just have some dialogue, because amazingly enough, we have done this, giving us back about 20 minutes of conversation time. So hang on one second.